Now to Mosul, where there have been important developments as Iraqi forces continue to take back the city. It's been a five-month campaign so far, which, as you'll know, we've been following off and on. It's been reported that US and Iraqi officials believe the leader of the IS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, has left the city and is now hiding in the desert. There are still diehard followers left to continue the battle, but it's also reported that an Iraqi flag has been raised over a government building, which is always a significant moment, and that the Iraqi Prime Minister, Haider al-Abadi, is visiting the city. What happens next, though, is a crucial time for Iraqi forces made up of Sunni and Shiite soldiers. To get a quick update, I'm joined by Roger Shanahan from the Lowy Institute, who's kept a very close eye on this and who specialises in Middle East security. Welcome, Roger.
Yeah, thanks, Geraldine.
What have you heard about Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi? Do you sense that he has left operational command in Mosul for good? And if so, what does this mean?
Well, I can really only go off probably the same sources that you've been quoting. I mean, this is always going to be one of the questions for Islamic State. Does their senior leadership stay in fight and die in place? Does it try and leave Iraq altogether? Or for the Iraqi members of Islamic State, do they try and hide amongst the support networks that they have? So if Baghdadi has left Mosul and is hiding amongst his tribal network in Iraq, we have to understand that he lived through the 2006 surge, and he's seen Islamic State's predecessors go down to very small numbers of fighters before they built themselves up again. So it's entirely plausible that he's going to try and do that again.
Yes, I read that he had learned from the capture of Osama bin Laden. So he relies on multiple couriers, you know, not just one. He switches cars like during trips because he also learned from the 2011 drone strike that killed Anwar al-Awlaki, who was that figure in Yemen. So he's had a lot of experience, dare we say.
Certainly, the top members of these organisations take their operational security very seriously for obvious reasons. But we still see relatively senior leadership still get targeted in strikes. So while they understand the importance of staying off outside of the telecommunications environment, it only takes one slip up for the targeters to be able to hone in on them.
In terms of exactly where things are, because it's very, I think we're all waiting for the sort of the liberation of Paris, if you know what I mean. I don't know whether it's going to be like that.
Not so scenic, I thought.
Certainly not that. But, you know, there was a tweet today, Friday, I'm talking to you, Iraqi forces nearing the Al-Nuri Mosque, where he gave his big speech about the caliphate inside Mosul. And another one, Iraq's armed forces had retaken the government buildings in central Mosul. What's your assessment of when we know that there's something utterly definitive has occurred?
Oh, well, I think we'll have to wait quite some time because the nature of urban conflict is you have to winkle out fighters from every building eventually. But there are some key elements that are very noteworthy for the Iraqi government because they have to put forward their own narrative. As you mentioned, taking back the mosque where al-Baghdadi announced his self-styled caliphate will be an important element of the pro-government narrative to say, listen, this is what he said a bit over 2 years ago, and now that's part of ancient history. And obviously re-establishing governance is going to be one of the key elements for the Iraqi government. So when you can put your flag over your own buildings that you've taken back from Islamic State, that too is important in reinforcing the narrative.
Anthony Cordesman from the Centre for Strategic and International Studies, we had him on the program twice about this. He warned, and I'm quoting him now, winning could all too easily divide Iraq on a lasting basis and could turn into new forms of civil conflict with Turkey, Iran and other regional powers jockeying for position in a divided Iraq. You know, that in fact it's the next stage where the Shiite soldiers have to prove to the Sunnis there that they're not going to behave in an appalling fashion. This is often the very difficult stage for armies, isn't it? They're united when they've got a purpose, and then it's actually the winning the peace is as much of a task.
Well, certainly, and you could argue what kind of peace is the peace going to be, because the kind of fundamental problems that we've seen of governance, in particular in Iraq, that allowed Islamic State to grow are still going to be there post their defeat. You know, there's issues of poor governance, there's issues of poor education systems not linked to labour markets, so the government isn't able to unify the country, and a real lack of what we would consider to be statesmen in the Iraqi political system. Too many people who are absorbed with their own self-interest, which we often see in politics, but unfortunately in the Iraqi context, they're also backed up in some cases by militias. So their ability to coalesce into an Iraqi national narrative is very easy when you're against a common enemy like Islamic State. Once the enemy is no longer there, that's when probably the hard part for nation building comes back.
Sure, they need an Adenauer and a Willy Brandt, don't they? Or something like it, who had Germany had mercifully after the end of World War II. Roger Shanahan, thank you very much indeed.
Okay, my pleasure.
And Roger is research fellow at the Lowy Institute, and we'll keep a very close eye on that, including the rather awful stories about a big mass grave being found at a place called Kasfa outside Mosul from the early days of the ISIS occupation.